Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. My guest today is Blair Horner. And Blair, you're the executive director of NYPERG, right?
That's right.
So Blair is here to talk about the legislative session and the budget and what's going on down at the state capitol. So Blair, have the past couple of months been busy, and how are you? I haven't seen you in quite a while.
I haven't seen you either, Cynthia. All is well with me personally. It's been an unbelievably busy legislative session. The pace was set very quickly within the first full week of session. Both houses were passing bills, and normally in the beginning of a two-year session, things start to tend to start up slowly. Committee chairs are getting appointed. They're trying to figure out what each house wants to do and the governor wants to do. In this case, because the Democrats took the Senate, you had a unified state government for the first time in a long time, and there was a lot of pent-up demand to do things, and so things have been moving very quickly. I've been working up here for 35 years. This is by far and away the busiest legislative session I've ever experienced.
Is it enjoyable?
Well, of course. For me, this is what I like to do. So it's fun, and you want to try to get. We're nonpartisan, so it doesn't matter to us. But we do like to get policy reforms passed, and it's been busy across the board since we work on so many different issues. There's been a lot of activity, and so it's been great.
So the Senate is a Democratic majority, but there seems to be some problems in the Assembly that progressive groups aren't particularly fond of what's going on in the Assembly. Can you kind of talk about that a little bit?
Well, we're not in the partisan category, and so, we may view things differently, and I'm, to some extent, I'm speculating on why people say those things. But my guess is that for progressive activists, particularly those involved in the Democratic Party, they had high hopes, and the legislative process is, despite what I was just saying before about how fast it's been going, it's still a deliberative process. And the Assembly Democrats have been controlling that House for over a generation. And, they go about the things the way they want to go about the things. And so my guess is whatever complaints progressive groups have probably related to whatever happened in the budget and or didn't happen in the budget. And so that is my guess that that's where a lot of it stems. The Senate Democrats, who now have a sizable majority, this is the biggest majority of either party easily in 40 years. A lot of their members got elected, the new members got elected as outspoken progressives and were able to articulate those positions clearly in their House. And the Assembly Democrats have been controlling that House, as I mentioned before, for a long time. And, at the end of the day, you have to pay for things. And so if they're not willing to raise taxes to do that, it's hard to get a lot of things done. So, for example, there were a lot of talk about single-payer health insurance, and that really never went anywhere so far this session. Certainly didn't go anywhere in the budget. And so those are the kinds of issues that are sort of, marquee issues for Democratic progressives, and they weren't really dealt with, and to some extent they blame the Assembly and probably the governor as well.
Now Sheldon Silver stepped down and Carl Hastie took his place. Since Carl Hastie has been leader, do you see an appreciable difference in the Assembly, how it's run, what's going on there, et cetera?
Well, it's, you only can see what you can see, and most of what happens in Albany is unseen because it's happening in secret or behind closed doors. And so, clearly to have a new Speaker of the Assembly, now relatively new, but he's only been Speaker for a few years, after he followed someone who had been Speaker for 20 years. There's going to be differences. There's personality differences. There's also a difference in the ability to control the House. The former Speaker of the Assembly really controlled the House with an iron fist. Hastie has to be much more responsive to his members. They both had to be, but he has to be more so. And, you know, he's consolidating, I think, his position within the House. But there are differences. And so Hastie appears to have, you know, much more of an interest in some of the criminal justice issues than the House. Either he does or the House has a different position on campaign finance reform than the former Speaker did. Now, again, you don't know how someone would have behaved had they still been in charge under these circumstances. So to some extent, it's comparing apples and oranges. But there are differences. Some of it are personal because of the way people behave. Part of it is the hand they've been dealt. Part of it is longevity versus newness. So there have been some differences. This speaker seems to have a pretty close working relationship with the governor, which may also influence how his House has been reacting to issues. So there's been differences, clearly, but the House itself, by and large, operates the way it used to. The staffing is set up the same way. The sort of the bureaucracy and how the place operates has been very similar to what it did under Silver, with the single notable difference in terms of the processes and structure is that as part of the pay raise deal that was agreed to last December, the ability of the Speaker to allocate stipends to the committee chairs has been sharply reduced. And to some extent that could have, it may not have a short-term impact, but it could have a long-term impact on the Speaker's ability to control the House.
And what about the state Senate? Have you seen an appreciable difference since Andrea Stewart Cousins is now the majority leader?
Well, on the processes, not as much as her Republican predecessors. The budget was negotiated behind closed doors by and large. There was really not, you couldn't really figure out what was going on any more than you could when the Republicans were in charge. Whether or not that changes over time, who knows? There's clearly policy differences. Democrats and Republicans don't view the world the same way. The Democrats have been much more active in terms of passing bills that deal with real problems. And there's been less of the partisan gridlock that occurred when the Republicans were in charge, and you had sort of a divided government. Now that there's a unified government, and there are a lot of state senators that are new, I think it's 16 new state senators, and I believe 14 of them are Democrats, that clearly has an impact. So I think on the processes, at least so far, it's very similar to what it's been in the past. And that's the way sort of Albany operates, behind closed doors. But in terms of the policies, there's been a lot more activity. And so, for example, something Republicans always killed was the reform of the limited liability company, so-called loophole in campaign finance, which treated limited liability companies as humans, not as a business for the purposes of campaign finance. And Democrats, came in and they narrowed the size of the loophole dramatically in the first week. And they also did a bunch of bills dealing with modernizing the state's elections and voter registration systems. Those things were hung up on partisan differences, and that's gone away. And so there's been a lot more activity on the policy side. The processes are very similar to what it has been in the past, although, again, that could change over time. This is their first rodeo when it comes to the budget.
The governor is now the highest paid, Governor Cuomo is now the highest paid governor in the United States. I find that interesting. How do you feel about all of the pay raises? Are you in favor of what went on as far as salaries for not only the executive but the legislative branch?
Well, you're right. Governor Cuomo will be the highest paid governor in the country by far, not even by a little bit. And when the next phase of the pay raise for the legislature goes into effect, they will be the highest paid legislature in the country. And just so your listeners know, there was a committee formed last year in the budget to review pay, legislative and executive pay, and to make recommendations. And the recommendations on the legislative branch and agency heads was binding. And as I mentioned before, the ability of the Speaker and the Senate Majority Leader to dole out stipends, the vast majority of them were cut away as part of this agreement. So lawmakers went from $79,500 to $110,000this past January in terms of salary. And because the budget was done in a timely fashion this past week, they will get another $10,000 boost and put them up at $120,000. And if next year budget is done in a timely fashion, they'll go to $130,000. So they're definitely moving up in terms of salary. I mean, we never thought that the pay of the governor, the agency heads, and the legislature should be tied to policy changes. It's sort of like extortion then. We always thought that there should be an independent panel created, similar to what California has, and on a regular basis, adjusting salaries upwards or downwards, depending on what's going on in the state. New York didn't have that. In this past committee that was appointed, they had the head of the CUNY Board of Trustees, the head of the SUNY Board of Trustees, this New York City Comptroller, and the New York State Comptroller deciding on salaries. And while I know them all and they're all honest, well-intentioned individuals, that's not an independent process. And they didn't have any meaningful public process in terms of, they were supposed to convene in the summer and they didn't really convene until after the election. And then made a decision a month later. So we think that that process needs to be changed and it should be based on an independent panel. In California, when the economy tanked 10 years ago, that panel lowered the salaries of the legislature and the governor because Californians were suffering, and the theory was that as the state budget of California was being impacted, lawmakers should feel the pain just like everybody else does. And so that, to us, makes more sense than political appointees making what inherently turns out to be a political decision. And some of the decisions that the committee made is now in court because people are challenging legality of it, and time will tell. But the thing that they cobbled together in terms of a process they did in last year's budget, again, negotiated behind closed doors, and so we'll see what happens in terms of the courts. But we think an independent panel just evaluating what is the appropriate level of compensation for lawmakers and members of the executive branch is a more appropriate way to go than to have these sort of sporadic decisions being made.
Would the increase in the salary for the senators and the assembly people, is there member items? I know it is Lulu's. Is that still in effect?
Well, what people call Lulu's are, as long as you and I are talking about the same thing, hopefully, that lawmakers get in addition to their salaries. And prior to the decision on the pay raise in December, there was basically stipends available. There were enough stipends available to give to everybody in both houses. And it didn't work out that way, just the way it was constructed. Every senator got a stipend, and every assembly Republican got a stipend, and half the assembly Democrats got a stipend. Those were, under this deal, very, very much cut back. So from roughly 200 stipends, there's now a total of 15, 6 in the Senate, 9 in the Assembly, and therefore the leadership in both houses and stipends for the committees, the financial committees in both houses, plus a couple others, dramatically cut back the number of those. And that's one of the issues that are being challenged in court, is whether or not the committee had the authority to do that.
Well, I know that every time a legislator comes up for a day, 2 days, a week, they get money for housing and food. Each day that they're up here. With the new salary increase, will that still be in effect, or will the, will they have to? It will still be in effect.
No, it'll still be in effect. They still get a stipend. It's tied to what the feds do in terms of congressional stipends, similar to that. They're allowed to get outside. They're allowed to have the stipend for housing and food and travel. The other thing that the that has a dramatic effect and is also in court is they said that you can't have significant outside income anymore starting at the end of this calendar year. And so that issue will start to bite in terms of lawmakers moonlighting as, you know, full-time whatevers by the end of the year, unless the courts intervene and say that what the committee did was incorrect. So that issue still has to play out, but another limitation will be that lawmakers will, if this stays in place, will be that lawmakers' primary salaries will be coming from being lawmakers, not from some outside business. And we think that's appropriate, given that state lawmakers should be really serving one master, and that one master is the public. And you can have conflicts if you both have business interests outside of your job and your job as a lawmaker. So we think it's appropriate. It's sort of modeled on what the Congress does. But that is an additional change. The staying overnight and travel and all that stuff, that all stayed in place.
Now, with outside income, if that's going to be prohibited, do you think that members who have outside income, like lawyers and so forth, do you think there's going to be a mass exit from the legislature because they want their outside income and they'd rather do that than get be paid to serve the people in New York State?
I don't think it'd be a mass exodus. Our reviews of their ethics filings, it's basically two-thirds of them don't have significant outside income now. So the vast majority of them, it doesn't affect at all, other than they get a pay raise. And so for the remainder, you know, some will leave and some will stay. And, you know, it's hard to know in advance which will be which.
Right.
But we think it's an appropriate restriction given the importance of their job in representing the public.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, one of the things that was talked about is campaign finance reform. And Cuomo, in the middle of March, had an expensive fundraiser in New York City, and Senator Biagi had, you know, called him out on this and two other members of the legislature, and one of Cuomo's staff referred to them as effing idiots, and because Biagi called Cuomo a hypocrite. So give us the background story on that.
Well, it's sort of amazing. I've never really seen anything like it. Just take it from the top. Yes, the governor advanced in his budget proposal a plan to set up a voluntary system of public financing in New York State, which would allow candidates running for office the option of choosing to rely primarily on small donors, small private donations that would be matched by clean public resources in terms of raising money to run for office. Going into that, you know, the issue was battling back and forth and wasn't clear what was going to happen. In the middle of March, it came to light that the governor had organized a fundraiser in Midtown Manhattan where the only way you could find out about it is if you were invited, and then you had to RSVP before you could even find out where it was. And the invitation, as Lisa's reported, was that you can make a $15,000 donation as an individual or a $25,000 donation for a couple in order to have, you know, seating and stuff at the event. And as those media reports came out, and there was a story in the New York Post, and there was a bigger story in the New York Times, which actually the reporter photographed the name tags that were on the table and then figured out who these people were and called them up. And people were saying things like, yeah, I'm going to this event because, you know, if he's successful in whatever the issue is, I make money. And the wrinkle in the fundraiser was the governor also had his head of the division of the budget and his chief of staff at the fundraiser with him while the budget was being negotiated. He had his head of the division of the budget there with him, which he has no role in the campaign. And so these three legislators, you're right, two state senators, Senators Biagi and Ramos, and Assembly Member New, held an impromptu news conference where they, you know, basically said that what the governor was doing was hypocritical. On the one hand, he wants campaign finance reform. On the other hand, he's having his fundraiser for high rollers. And in an amazing sort of turn of events, the governor's, one of his top policy advisors and communications guys, said on the record a profane comment about these three women. So it's sort of spun out of control, but it may have, ironically, helped put more pressure on the system to come up with a public financing plan that was included ultimately at the end of the budget.
Wow. So now that the budget is passed and, you know, now that they'll be talking about issues, there was a lot of stuff that passed at the beginning, you know, the first couple of weeks. Do you see the rest of the session as being productive?
Well, it's always hard to know, but I think the short answer is yes. I think this will turn out to be one of the most productive sessions I've ever seen. It already is, right?
Wow.
And I think it's the pent-up demand. Now, you know, because they're all Democrats doesn't mean they all get along with each other. And there's an old sort of joke about Democratic firing squads lining up in a circle. And so there's some element of that. There's always tension between the legislative branch and the executive branch. And, you know, so there'll certainly be tensions. It's by no means smooth sailing. But you don't have the partisan gridlock. You just have sort of the institutional tension between the legislative and executive branches. And then you have, you know, whatever is going on among Democrats in terms of their, you know, there are some Democrats that are very conservative. There are some Democrats that are very liberal. So you still have to come up with, you still have to bridge ideological differences and institutional differences. But you don't have to deal with the partisan ones. In many ways, the partisan ones are the hardest to surmount. I think that they're going to keep banging away on issues, and it could well be one of the most productive ones in certainly since I've been here, which goes back to 1984.
Wow. So, you know, at the end of June, when the session is over, I'd like to have you come back on Focus on Albany to talk about what happened during this session, what good came out of it, what not so good came out of it. People, they go about their daily lives, and not many people, I would assume, read City and State newsletter every morning. So would you come back and give us your assessment session?
Your wish is my command.
Blair, you're terrific. So you've been listening to Blair Horner, who is the executive director of NYPIRG. Blair, give NYPIRG a little plug, what it does and the importance of it.
Well, NYPIRG's been around for over four decades, and as a public interest organization, we do not have a financial stake in the outcome of the issues that are being debated. So, you know, we we try to identify problems that are in our areas of expertise and advance
mm-hmm.
policy solutions to those problems and try to do so relying on best practices found in the country or in the world. And we
mm-hmm.
have a wide range of issues we're interested in, climate change issues, affordability of higher education, access to health care, quality of health care, energy policy, consumer protection, and good governance. And so we try to deal with those issues as best we can. If people want to know more about us, they can go on the website, go to NYPIRG, NYP as in public, IRG.
Thank you, Blair. So if you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany on Twitter. Thanks, Blair. Enjoy the rest of the season, and we'll talk at the end of June. And thank you, everybody,
Great,
for listening.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day.